Alert Podcast. I am your host, Pyle, and with me is Uber Bill and Wise Girl. And this is our inaugural podcast, so it's probably going to have some rough edges. And I hope you'll just bear with us while we iron out the kinks. In case you're not familiar, BS Alert is the critical thinker's guide to news, politics, religion, and business, and everything in between. We kind of take a slightly cynical, critical, free-thinking approach towards evaluating what's going on this planet and in our society. And you're likely to see a lot of stuff on the website that really doesn't appear in mainstream media. But these days, unless you're interested in Paris Hilton, a lot doesn't appear in mainstream media. Anyway, let me welcome Wise Girl and Uber Bill. Say hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Hello.
And I think what we're going to do, in the future we're probably going to have guests and people calling in and things like that. But this first episode, we're kind of just going to go a little bit about what the site does, what the objectives are, and some of the content and stuff that's going on. We'll just kind of freestyle it from there. Anyway, on with the show. And first off, let's just go around the table here and get everybody's impression of what they think of BS Alert. Because it kind of started as a basically a way to keep me from annoying the crap out of all my friends by forwarding them emails about every little thing that kind of pissed me off. Yeah, I decided instead of sending, oh my God, send this to all your friends, I figured I'd
create... You get ad revenue for it.
That's right, yeah. Well, at some point, maybe.
In theory.
Yeah, in theory. I think we sold some bumper stickers, though. You know. Yes, it's basically turned into a little kind of sounding board, and we've had a lot of people jump on, and different people in other communities, and it's turned out to be a lot of fun. So the podcast is the next logical extension there.
It is an extension anyway.
Right. We'll see how it goes. But we really do want to have a lot of interesting people, newsmakers, weird people. We're not trying to compete with some of these other sites like FARC or Dig. I don't want to put up every little story about, you know, somebody in Florida who's caught naked with drugs. And
well, if you had a story
a
about
station.
Yeah, every odd person in Florida, you'd have way too many stories.
Well, you'd have FARC.com. Okay, why don't we just as an example, we'll go over a couple of issues we've got. Right now, we have this weird thing. There's a group, I believe, out of Australia called... No, it's not out of Australia. But they're called Americans United. And they petitioned the IRS to investigate a Baptist church in California because they're quite overtly promoting presidential candidates. And it's considered not completely legal.
Well, how overt... And I unfortunately have not heard about the story, but how overt is overt? Are they from the pulpit telling you to vote for Mr. X.
Even better, they are sending out letters to their parishioners on church stationery, church letterhead, recommending a particular candidate who happens to be fairly pro-religion and...
Shocking.
Well, let's look at their press release. It says, yesterday, Americans United asked the Internal Revenue Service to investigate the First Southern Baptist Church of Buena Park, California, for a potential violation of federal tax law barring electioneering by nonprofit groups. Dr. Wiley S. Drake, pastor of the church. Yes,
I was hoping,
very good name.
I was hoping you were going to say coyote. I guess.
He issued a press release on church letterhead endorsing Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. That, if you, for those of you who forgot, he's the one that doesn't believe in evolution.
And I believe he's also a Baptist minister.
Right.
That I didn't know. Yeah. Interesting.
And they subsequently offered the endorsement on a church-affiliated radio show. So they're trying to, and I think this is a clear-cut example of nonprofit groups crossing that boundary.
Absolutely.
Overtly endorsing a presidential candidate.
Yeah, it doesn't really get more clear-cut than that. So
now what's interesting, what made this on BS Alert, is not that there's just another church that's kind of playing with the law, because that's kind of pretty common. Instead of responding to Americans United's concern of illegal activity, Drake issued a plea to his supporters to join in imprecatory prayers. Am I pronouncing that right?
Sounds good.
Imprecatory. They're otherwise known as curses.
Ah.
Every morning for Voodoo. Americans United and its staff. The Basically, he's praying for the demise of the Americans United staff, and he's named the people on the press release specifically. And Americans United, their response is, instead of addressing our concerns of illegally melding religion and partisan politics, Dr. Drake has launched an outlandish attack calling for curses on us.
God hates squealers.
Yeah, it might distract his supporters, but it won't help him with the IRS. I trust the tax agents will investigate Drake's view. Well, maybe, you know, he hasn't turned it on the IRS yet, so you never know.
Yeah. Well, that's quite an organization to bring down. You'd have to have a lot of prayers to bring down the IRS, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You figure if prayers actually worked, the IRS would be a smoldering pile of rubble right about now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I wonder if the IRS will respond soon, or, you know, next tax season, or...
Well, in
10 years from
in a section of this guy's press release, he outlined how to pray, and he includes a long list of biblical citations that call on God to smite enemies.
Those are Old Testament, I'm guessing. That's a lot of...
Always.
Oh, yeah. He was a God, Old Testament God. He was not a happy camper.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, although wasn't he on the side of the IRS too? Didn't he say render unto Caesar?
That was Jesus. That was the new fluffy. That was the touchy feely.
Oh, so maybe Old Testament God didn't like the IRS either. So
probably he didn't like a lot of people. So.
Right.
He said, for example, the alleged enemies of God, quote, shall be judged, condemned, and his days be few. Additionally, supporters could pray for the enemy's children to be fatherless and his wife a widow, and his children be continual vagabonds and beg. Let them seek bread also out of their desolate places.
So which the IRS is also aiming for, so maybe they have
a certain
similar
synergy
goals.
There.
There's that religion of peace happening, I think, right there. You know.
Yeah, I'm glad they just skipped over that whole part about do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And
well, maybe they want a challenge, you know. Maybe it's a bring it on kind of moment there, you know. It's like our God versus your heathen hippiness or whatever they figure that the...
What I don't understand is if they're praying to stop a guy that's sicking the IRS on them, and so they obviously think prayers work, why are they bothering with that? You know, that's like... It's like praying to have a parking ticket disappear. Why don't you just pray that the whole idea of parking tickets should disappear?
Indeed.
Or at least, you know, pray that you win your IRS case.
Or pray that Jesus shows up and takes you to heaven.
Or pray for huge sacks of cash. I mean, right. You know.
Pray for Mike Huckabee to go straight into the presidency.
Absolutely. Well, and clearly they're doing that. I guess this is a little sideline, is praying for the smiting, for their enemies to be smote. Smoted? I don't really know the conjugation of smitten. I don't think that works, though.
I'm not a smitologist. Smitten. I don't know.
Secondhand smote. I don't know how that works. The smote, smiting.
But you know, maybe they're onto something though. Maybe that's the real power of prayer, is to destroy things.
Destruction. The power of prayer.
You know, I mean, there's right now there's what that mining accident, and we don't even have to mention the specific mining accident, because whenever this podcast is played, there's probably some mining accident. You know.
Indeed. And, not a safe profession, mining.
Right. But there's always going to be somebody who's praying for them.
Oh, absolutely.
And if there's one person that comes out and 87 have died, it's a miracle.
It is, in fact. So, absolutely.
That must be that Old Testament God that does that kind of stuff. And
indeed. But then you have the devil. He gets up to mischief. And so you never know when it is a miracle that one survived, or when it was the work of the devil that the 86 perished under tons of rock. I don't know.
Well, you think God has power over the devil, you know?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I'm sure we don't really want to get into.
Yeah, we don't want to get into.
We don't want to go off on that tangent there. But
another news story that has not really made mainstream news is that there's a doctor. Michael Moore's Sicko movie came out recently, and it's being distributed by Lionsgate, and it opened in. I think, 400 theaters. And they had originally planned to open in 1,600. But a week after the release, it was dropped down. And this decision was made about the same time that a Dr. Racheski purchased over 40 million shares of Lionsgate stock. And at least 33.4% ownership in the company. And this guy is tied to all kinds of companies that are exactly the enemies of this movie.
Oh, come on. That's just a coincidence. Yeah. He just likes movies.
He just likes movies and HMOs.
Didn't Hostel or Lionsgate put out Hostel as well? Like, maybe he just digs the torture porn. You don't know.
Him and...
There's money in that.
Carex Biopharmaceuticals and Novadel Pharma, and
they just want to send their employees to movies on a Saturday morning. As
Medical
perk.
Nutrition USA and Neos Technologies, and there are all these biomed companies, you know, that are interested in doing research, but then owning the drugs and then selling them for $800 a pill,
or even better, owning the genes of various people, animals, and substances. That turn out to be useful and interesting in some way, because you can pretty much own anything now.
Could I eBay my genes? Is that possible?
I'm sure
there's some traits I don't need that if I could get some money for, that'd be great. The mortgage is due.
Yeah. But that's something that really was not covered, and there's the actual SEC record showing this guy buying the stock. And then there's hardcore information linking him to all kinds of pharmaceutical and insurance and HMO companies. And nobody's really pursued it. I don't know why. I think the mainstream media has really done a good job of making Michael Moore out to be some kind of evil person.
Left-wing crackpot.
Yeah.
I mean, he can be a bit of a jackass, but still, he's our jackass. Speaking as a left-wing.
Well, I think that's that same kind of attitude people say about Saddam Hussein. You know, Saddam Hussein's really, really evil. Well, you know, I don't know Saddam Hussein. I wasn't over there. I didn't live under his regime.
That's true. I didn't get thrown into a vat
of acid. He could have been, all things considered, he might not have been that bad of a guy over there.
He wrote romance novels. He's obviously got, like, a soft and loving heart.
All right.
Right.
I mean, I'm not happy about the war in Iraq, but I don't know that we can be, you know, he can't be like, oh, he was so misunderstood. He was he owned puppies, and he liked wrapping paper. I don't know. I mean, I don't think you can, I don't think you can say that he was necessarily.
Well, but the point is, you don't, okay, right. You know, when people say Saddam was a very, very bad man, that is their impression based
on
circumstantial on information and hearsay. And I'm not suggesting that he's a great guy, but I'm certainly, I think that all of us as Americans, we should be a little bit reserved and recognize that.
I don't have these knee-jerk. Yeah,
I don't know Saddam Hussein.
Well, you never will get the chance to.
Now, what I know about him is what I saw on television, and you know, TV kind of is sometimes not always truthful.
No.
And let's not forget that in the 80s, he was one of our very bestest friends.
Don Rumsfeld, loved the man.
Right, and that's when he supposedly did all of this stuff. So, you know, typically the whole concept of morality implies that if you see somebody doing an atrocity and you don't do anything, you're almost as guilty. But we conveniently don't talk about that when we talk about how evil he was when we were standing there shaking hands with him while he was doing this stuff.
Who do you think sold him those chemical weapons that he used on his own people?
He
didn't make them himself.
No, clearly. It turns out he couldn't make anything. We sold them all.
Yeah, but the, see, the point is I think that the Michael Moore stigma is a lot like that. I think people go, well, you know, Michael Moore, he's a little bit over the top. But the truth of the matter is if you really dive deeper into all the criticism of him,
they're fairly baseless.
They're really shallow.
Oh,
I mean, he's pointed, just like Spike Lee. He's got an, you know, but everybody, I mean, anybody who makes a movie has a point of view.
Oh, of course.
I don't understand why the conservatives go, oh my God, did you see that? He's putting his opinion into his work.
And it's interesting that has there ever been a right wing, and here I'm making the quotation mark sign, a right wing documentary that has been as popular as any of Michael Moore's documentaries, or any of the kind of liberal leaning, like the Fox documentary.
Well, if you ask a conservative, I'm sure he's going to say,
well,
yes.
Well, no, but it played on any screens, 400 or 100, or has there been a right wing documentary that is?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, reality has a liberal bias. See?
Yeah, well, that's
the problem.
Absolutely.
By the way, let's. Speaking of liberal bias, I think it's worth going into the guy from Daily Kos, Marcos Maloutsas. Am I pronouncing his name right?
Absolutely.
Sounds good to me so far.
Yeah, why not?
Stephen Colbert had him on, and you know, this is a good example of they're really trying to turn him into like Satan. Well, they're trying to turn him into Hitler. You know, I mean,
I thought it was the Klan.
I think it was Hitler and the Klan, kind of. Well, though that'd be a great
Hitler
band.
And the Klan and Stephen Colbert. This is a good example of how the mainstream media is trying to turn this. Otherwise, I actually think Daily Kos is kind of moderate. I mean, they're.
It's so diverse. Well, it's not diverse, but it has so many points of view that you kind of.
And you know what? They were a hardcore Democratic site, toeing the Democratic line, and then the Democrats started acting like little spineless wimps. And they've slowly gone more moderate. and I think they've trolled in a lot of moderates and a lot of conservative people that have abandoned the Republican Party. And, of course, the hardcore extremists like Bill O'Reilly and his people, they're really, really threatened by this guy. So Colbert kind of really captured, in my opinion, what, you know, an example of how the media has done this kind of stuff. So I'm going to play a little clip. So, let's see.
Would this be one of those aforementioned rough edges?
Oh, yeah.
This will be edited out.
They're hiding something. And worst of all, your Democrat open forum websites, led by the goose-stepping blog Gestapo at dailycos.com. Yeah. Oh, I'm going after him. Don't worry. This Fourth Reich was rooted out by a man who knows his fatherlands, Papa Bear Bill O'Reilly.
It is the Ku Klux Klan. There's no difference. Nothing different than the Nazis or the Ku Klux Klan. A left-wing Nazi hate sites. It's like the Ku Klux Klan. It's like the Nazi Party.
There is one difference. Nazis build bunkers. Daily Kos bloggers build pillow forts. Now, over the weekend, the head of the Ku Klux Klan, Grand Dragon Marcos Maloutsas, appeared on Meet the Press. You know who else has been on Meet the Press? Fidel Castro and Judas. I haven't confirmed that, but the show's been on forever. Well, I, for one, will not appease this rising threat. Nation, I recently went undercover as a Daily Kos blogger, registering under the discreet name of not Stephen Colbert. To complete my blogger disguise, I also didn't exercise, played 3 hours of Halo, and ate onion dip with a spoon. Now, I am going to log on to my account right now, folks,
so
and expose just how hateful this website truly is. Let's see here. Hungarians are dirty ghoulies who wash in peanut oil, Heil Healthcare, and Post. Okay, now let's see what's on Daily Kos today. Oh, my God. Hungarians are dirty ghoulies. I can't read this on the air. This
There's
is unforgivable.
A lot more truth in that than...
Here now to defend the indefensible is the Fuhrer himself, Daily Kos founder, Marcos Melitos. Marcos?
And, of course, this is really clever, the pseudo-Nazi banner that they kind of drop down...
Thank you so much. Oh, Jimmy, could we get the banner, please?
Yeah, here's the banner. Drop this Nazi banner, this perversion with a K.
This is the banner on your website, right?
I don't think it is.
You don't think so? Does that look like anything to you?
It doesn't ring any bells.
No, it doesn't ring any bells? That's a K. That's a K. Okay.
Made
All right.
Out of
well, now, let's get straight to this. What do you have against the Hungarian people?
In reality, some of my best friends are Hungarian.
Well, it's hard to tell because you've got some hate speech on your site right here. Why did you write that?
Considering that I was backstage at your show, I don't think I kind of wrote that.
But it's on your site. You're responsible for anything anyone posts on your site.
It's called an open forum. It's called democracy. And sometimes some idiots get on there and write things about Hungarians.
But if you, listen, it doesn't matter. No, I can take care of myself. I'm a big boy. Okay, but if it's on your website, don't you have to take responsibility for it? I mean, the New York Times has to take responsibility for what's on their editorial page or who writes their letters to the editor. You're no different.
Well, they approve it.
Well, in reality, the beauty of what we're doing at Daily Kos and other blogs like it is we're giving regular Americans a voice in their politics to go on and talk about the things that they're passionate about. Now, at Daily Kos, we don't allow truly hateful speech, but, you know, Papa Bear thinks anything that disagrees with his point of view, conservative point of view, is hate speech. So that's where this whole argument is really coming from.
But if somebody does say something that's hateful on here, and it's your website, by the transitive property of hate, it's your words.
I love that. By the transitive property of hate. You know, that's really quite true when you're talking about the right-wingers, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Just admit O'Reilly's right. Just admit it.
You know I can't do that. You know
O'Reilly
I can't do that.
Is right. Post. It's on your website. You just admitted that O'Reilly is right. You just admitted it right there.
You know, if you gave me that computer, maybe some other things would be on there.
Okay, listen, you've made your point. I'm a fair guy. I'll let you have the last word. Let me just ask you a question I ask all my guests. Just show me the internet. How tall is a
Oh, they
a
try to get
Dane?
Him to do the same thing in front of the...
Show me about this tall. How tall is a pony?
I haven't seen this picture show up yet.
Freeze it! Oh, you missed it!
They missed it!
They tried to get him to raise his hand with the Daily Kos swastika sign. It's really a funny little bit, but it certainly does illustrate what's going on, the dynamics of how the mainstream media is attacking the internet. You know, they apply the same standards to journalism and network television that they do to the internet by assuming that if it's on somebody's website, it's like being in print and, you know, it was approved and meticulously edited before it was put online for public consumption. And that's just not the nature of the internet. And
as they'd know if they ever, say, went on the internet.
All the tubes. And
well,
the
I know. I mean, at this point, you just can't even assume that these people aren't fully aware that they're just complete bullshitters.
Oh, yeah, just exploiting the perception that they don't know anything.
I mean, when this story first broke, where Bill O'Reilly was exercising some tiny little snippets of anti-Semitic comments... And you know what? If you have any website with any amount of traffic at all, and you give people the ability to to post and put content on there, you are going to get everything across the spectrum. It doesn't matter. You're going to get pornographic messages. You're going to get spam. You're going to get anti-Semitic stuff. It's just the nature of people thinking they're anonymous, and they hit these websites, and they just decide, oh, you know, I don't like black people. Post.
I do need a larger penis.
You know?
I
mean, and it's what happens is that you can't control this kind of stuff. So they, of course, found some posts that might have been buried way back in the middle, and they made a big stink about them. Well, of course, the Daily Coast people were like, well, what do you expect? That's the nature of this medium. This stuff is not approved by an editor before it goes online. It's a much more democratic process.
Right. Say the Ku Klux Klan or the Nazis. Right.
Right. If you look at that website and most of the other websites, there's a process where people can flag comments. They can moderate them up or down, and there's a point system. So if somebody says something stupid or ignorant, it doesn't necessarily get deleted. It might just get moderated down and flagged as a troll or something.
And if these things got cut, if comments were getting cut by moderators, then another stink would be raised,
right,
saying, you know, they're censoring free speech on the internet. And so, you know, for liberal bloggers and bloggers of any political spectrum, it's a no-win situation.
Right. Conservative posts on Daily Coast, he would just love to have his post deleted, because then he'd go ranting about they don't believe in freedom of expression, blah, blah, blah. So one of the things you do find is the more leftist the blogs are, the more likely there are to even allow people to comment. I mean, you know, go to some of these right-wing blogs. They don't even have comments enabled.
Right.
You know, they don't even want to entertain another point of view.
Absolutely.
But what's funny is when the story broke, of course, the Daily Coast people went over to Bill O'Reilly's forum and found a ton of inflammatory posts and images, you know, comparing Hillary to the Nazis and, you know, all kinds of stuff that really made whatever Bill called attention to seem kind of trivial.
And of course, he made a full apology and
he pretended that nothing happened.
Of course.
You know, kind of like that whole falafel vibrating penis in his butt, sexually harassing his coworker thing. He pretends it never happened, you know. So,
man,
if a tree falls in the forest and no one prints it in the newspaper, then it really couldn't have possibly happened.
Right.
It's all a part of being fair and balanced. Of course.
let's. This is a good segue into another big story, which is Fox News caught hacking Wikipedia.
Which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, this is an example of people just being clueless and not understanding the nature of the internet and thinking they can get away with stuff. I mean, let's just establish this. There's nothing anonymous about the internet. You know, I had somebody hack one of my sites yesterday, and it took us 1 hour to find out where they lived, their home phone number, how old they were. We found all their MySpace pages.
And I am sorry about that, man. My bad. I apologize. Couldn't help myself.
I didn't appreciate that comment about licking Hulk Hogan's butt. Just want
you
to know
what
that.
You did.
but anyway, one of you guys want to describe what the situation is with the Wikipedia hacking scandal?
Well, basically, somebody invented a tool which you could use to track down who made various changes to Wikipedia and find out.
And we know what Wikipedia is, right? You don't want to. You never know. There might be some old lady that finds a CD on the ground of this podcast. So.
Wikipedia is basically a site which is like an encyclopedia, only anybody in the world can edit and write the entries. And the idea is that if you get enough people chiming in, eventually you'll whittle out all the untruths and get down to what is actually pretty much fact. And it generally, most of the time, works. Because everybody out there is an expert on something.
Right, like a democratic encyclopedia. And it's a very open system. People can contribute content, but there's a whole swarm of editors that crawl over the site and make sure that that things aren't totally out of hand. Anyway, obviously, when you give the American public the ability to go in and change the encyclopedia on a whim, interesting things happen. Now, the wiki software that this system is running on tracks all the changes. So any change that's made, it notes the IP address, your little internet connection number, and it actually identifies exactly what you changed. So people can look at the history of a page up on Wikipedia, and they can see exactly how it's changed. Now, what's interesting is when you hear the news media talk about the unreliability of Wikipedia as a information resource, I challenge you to find any other information resource where you can go over the history of the development of that information, where it came from, who added it, what they changed. I mean, even if you assume that some of the information on Wikipedia is of a dubious source, with one click you can look at the history of the development of that page and you can see who changed it and what they changed.
Which doesn't necessarily mean that everything that's been changed or added is necessarily true. You could certainly backtrack and find out, you know, what these people know, but if you
make a change on Wikipedia, like if you edit any article, you know, like there's an article on honeybees and you just edit the page and say honeybees make more honey when listening to Celine Dion, okay? And you hit save. I guarantee you within a day or two, there's going to be a little note there that says citation needed.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can't just put stuff in Wikipedia without people going, unless you can back this up with some evidence, it's going to be removed.
Sure.
So anyway, what's happened is, and people vandalize the site all the time, and editors go through and they revert the stuff back to the way it was. And it's really I would totally trust Wikipedia over just about anything. I mean,
oh yeah, I use it daily.
I mean, if you look up a page on Bill Clinton, you know, I'm sure that any on any given day, you know, it might say Dick somewhere in there, you know, just because there's going to be some Bill O'Reilly fan that's going to just, you know,
go off on cigars.
Right, right. But it'll be flipped back and you can spot that kind of stuff. It's not like it's really weird, creepy, underhanded, conspiratorial things. So anyway, what happened is somebody made this tool to go search through and identify patterns of editing and changes. They discovered an interesting array of edits to various people's pages on Wikipedia, and they traced the IP address straight back to the offices of Fox News in Washington, D.C. And go ahead.
Oh, just some of the edits are absolutely, I mean, hilarious. Well, some of them are. It's scary what they tried to undo or to add. Most of them are deletions, I believe, from what I looked at. But my favorite, actually, was when they were a reference to, I think, Media Matters. They added the adjective liberal, except they misspelled it, liberala. And so there are two separate changes for that entry. They put the liberala, and then they had to fix it. And then, of course, later it got removed by one of the aforementioned editors.
Yeah, well, on our page, we have a screen capture of a difference, which is a picture of a visual image of what the Wikipedia page looked like before and after the Fox News people came in there and changed it. And this particular page is of Al Franken. And there's a portion of Al Franken's bio where he talks about having gone on NPR talking about his book, which was critical of Fox News and Bill O'Reilly, and somebody, the Fox News people, edited it and inserted the word liberal before National Public Radio. and also removed a phrase that said that when Fox's case against Al Franken was brought to court, it was literally laughed out of court, wholly without merit. Fox News decided that they didn't want that there. So, another interesting thing that Fox News did was they sanitized the bio of some of the people that were working for them. Certain reporters like Carl Cameron. They removed any criticism. They loved to mess with Keith Olbermann's page, yeah. Constantly like inserting little things implying that he was using the. He was abusing his position for his own ego, weird things like
that. Or even that he was along with his partner at ESPN, and I don't remember his partner's name. They were one of the best sports commentating pairs in the history of ESPN that got chopped.
Yeah, I mean, like, what he made some little
positive.
He made a little list of like second, third baseman,
third base
history.
Coaches, and it's in the Baseball Hall of Fame as the most best source for third base coaches.
And somebody at Fox said, no, we can't have that.
He didn't do anything good. Get rid of that.
Oh, and an interesting thing: the managing editor of Fox News, Britt Hume, his son. Killed himself.
Sandy Hume, yeah.
He just, with a hunting rifle, shot himself. And Fox decided that they wanted all that information removed from Wiki.
Reference to it even being a suicide. They actually added passed away instead of suicide.
Right. And there's another page where they removed something from Keith Olbermann's site where he talked about how he had smoked and it had caused problems, and he decided he was going to campaign to help people stop smoking. And Fox News thought, well, we can't have that there either. Just really bizarre changes that they didn't think anybody would ever notice. And somebody managed to do a little bit of research and see this long string. So they're all, you can go to the website and see the actual pages. And of course, I don't know, have they responded to any of this?
I'm doubting it.
So.
Yeah, I don't think.
And this is, of course, just the tip of the iceberg. You know, I mean, it's not like Fox News is the only company that has ever gone in and rewritten history.
Oh, yeah, I think I'm sure that tobacco companies probably have a full-time intern to go in and
actually, there were numerous organizations on the left and the right, and government offices, private companies, drug companies, pharmaceutical companies, were quite big on changing their entries to make them a little bit nicer.
Yeah,
right.
And
Diebold, Walmart, Exxon, the New York Times, Al Jazeera, Pfizer, the Vatican. Vatican even apparently got in there.
I'm
sure they
the
removed
Vatican.
Some stuff there about little boys and stuff like that.
Little boys, the Inquisition, the Irish saving civilization, you know.
It's just a theory.
It's just a theory. Rogue priests in the 15th century. And I think it's important to note that it isn't just a right wing phenomenon. I'm sure that on the right and left.
I believe the New York Times was on the list.
Right. Times,
for example.
Although I'm sure the Post is probably in there somewhere as well.
Again, is the New York Times a left organization? I mean, I don't even know. Is there any mainstream media that's really? Like, we're not... We're
just BS alert.
Seriously, I really... You know what? We've done more than our fair share of stories about Democrats and liberals that have done stupid stuff. I mean, not the least of which is our very own Bill Jefferson.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Well, he's an idiot.
Yeah, we're here in New Orleans, by the way, and we're broadcasting.
They might have missiles, Pyle. Jesus.
We're broadcasting from a FEMA trailer.
In a bunker.
Yes.
Waiting for Dean to come, which by the time anyone listens to this, maybe Dean will have come and gone, but he's storming here now, so we'll see.
Now, one thing I would like maybe Wise Girl put a story up that I thought was interesting about this. Math debunks myth of Casanova men and chaste women.
Chaste.
Well, that's a word I'm not familiar with.
Chastity.
Chaste, whatever.
No maybe, relation to chasing.
Maybe you can explain that so we know what exactly that the idea behind that is.
Well, basically, a mathematician pointed out and proved mathematically, although I don't think it really required a whole lot of math, that when you have surveys and men say that they've slept with, say, on average, 7 women in their lifetimes, and women say, we've slept with an average of 4 men, that basically doesn't work, because where are those other 3 women? You have to have a kind of a one-to-one match.
Presumably.
Well, no. If it's a new partner for the man, it's a new partner for the woman,
this
too.
Is true.
Every
this
single
is true.
Time.
Unless they're counting unique instances, but surely that's not the case.
Well, no. It's number of partners, not number of sexual encounters.
Nice.
You've got a nice menage a trois. You've got two new partners per person.
Yeah.
It's an even distribution.
Wow.
So either somebody is just flat out lying or exaggerating or...
Women lying about sex? Come on.
Yes. Men never do that either. They would. Why would they lie? Just because they wanted to be seen as studly.
Well,
I've slept with 47 women, all
right? Men and women lie in different ways, right? A man will lie and go, I was with my friends when he was at a strip club. A woman will lie and go, the baby's yours. A little different there, I think.
She might believe it.
She might honestly not know.
Well, but in
from
both,
those that one partner that she had.
In both cases, each one is trying to spare the feelings of the other, are they not?
Yeah, keep telling yourself that.
Ooh, jeez.
Well, it's interesting that...
No, that is very interesting. I mean,
we knew there was a little flaw there in the whole notion of how so many kids, and nobody's having sex.
Oh, well, yeah. Oh,
they're all immaculate conceptions or something.
Right.
We need to teach more abstinence, damn it. It's
That's
just not sticking.
Or, you know, if they can just teach people to count properly.
Let's see. I slept with that guy the other day, and then average it. You got to ballpark it.
Women, y'all are the best at rationalizing stuff. You know, well, he only penetrated me for like 11 seconds.
I only enjoyed it with three guys.
I was drunk. I didn't count. The lights weren't on. I didn't know if he was even in the room. I felt something.
I think that men certainly would be more likely to inflate the number as well as women. Would
it was
be
his
likely
best
to.
Friend. That doesn't count.
Uh-huh.
My boyfriend's best friend.
I
Don't
woke
count
up
that
in on the couch in her apartment. I'm
we
almost
totally
positive
had
something
sex.
Happened.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you, we might lie.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's so obvious. It's like, you know, hey, dude, I saw you were really wasted last night, and you took that fat girl home. You didn't do anything. No. I mean, you know, it's not like.
Yeah, but I don't think the researchers who are compiling these numbers are like these people's best friends. They're not like, so, dude, how many women did you sleep with in your life?
Yeah, but you see, men have no motivation to lie on a form. You know,
for their own ego.
Why would women have a reason to lie?
Because women believe it. Women convince themselves that when they slept with their boyfriend's best friend,
but that goes back to the issue of why lie on a form.
Or when they did the whole bride's party, you know, during their friend's wedding, it never happened. No, never happened. Did not happen.
I think we're getting off on We're going somewhere we don't really want to go.
Okay.
Vis-a-vis battle.
There goes
the
demographics for this show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, seriously.
That's right.
We don't want to be cutting our readership or listenership at all.
Well, they don't call me Pyle for nothing, you know? So.
Shazayo.
It's that logo. It's just scientifically designed to bring women in, you know? So.
Oh, God.
Oh. CBSAlert.com to figure out what the hell he's talking about. Over and over again, click on every link.
We'll start off, what's the wine for tonight? We're all having a glass of wine.
Oh, yeah.
The wine for tonight is a 2004 Franciscan Cabernet Sauvignon from the Napa Valley.
It's delightful.
It's a delightful Cabernet. a little bit dry, a little nice.
That doesn't
nice
work when you
tannin,
do that.
But very drinkable. Goes down easy.
And it's alcoholic.
Yes,
my
we like
favorite
that the
kind.
Best.
Yes. Speaking of paring down our listenership, I also had a Corona earlier tonight. I don't know if that helps.
It's early, so it was a singular version of that. By the way,
my beer hat only has the one in it. Yeah.
I want to compliment Wise Girl on her her amazing graphic work on our story called "That's a One Spicy Arms Deal."
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Both Uber Bill and I were quite impressed with your like AK-47 shaped pepperoni slices on top of some
meatballs.
Oh, those are meatballs.
Meatballs,
those are
yeah. Oh, clearly meatballs.
Meatballs.
Okay. Oh, that was beautiful, and the editing job that she did on the story, where I just kind of flung text at the page. That was, yeah.
Right. The story Why don't you give us a summary of this story, Mr. Uber?
Certainly. Well, in the course of an investigation into mafia-related activities, which I think probably takes up like 90 to 95% of the Italian police division's time, they were following this guy in an airport. And they went, when he checked his luggage, they went and opened it. They got a warrant, presumably. I actually don't know that that's in the story. They opened this guy's luggage, expecting to find drugs or drug-related information, something that they could pin on the mafia. Well, it turns out what they found were bulletproof vests and helmets and a catalog of weapons. I don't really know how big this guy's luggage
was. I love
this.
I love that there's the black market is so organized that they've got like their own little Sears catalog. Yeah. You know, can you see like
just pictures? The guy, a smiling terrorist with a giant gun. You know,
no, like
or bikini
like
clad
a little
woman.
Child with a thing of C4. You know, and that smile on his
with
face.
No articles.
Right. Just you know,
little tear out order form in the back. You know.
Right. Cheesy ads for like you know X-ray glasses.
Buy four, get one free.
Right. So they found this catalog, or the wish list of weapons, and from this they of course started an investigation, and ended up tracking this whole convoluted arms deal between unknown Iraqi entities who were declaring themselves at times to be from the Iraqi government, from the Interior Ministry, and also they said they were from security ministries. These were in emails from the Iraqi entities to an Italian who worked for. Do you have that article up? What is the? I can't remember the name of that. Not very important. Anyway, a company that had been involved with selling equipment like military equipment, night vision goggles. Who these Iraqis found out could also supply them with weapons. And so they sent emails back and forth to
but
get...
But this was all done, like, outside of the American provisional government,
oh, that's right.
The, that's the big thing here.
That's
is
the huge thing. The Iraqis swore in these emails that they had the express permission of the American government. Presumably it went something like, and the Americans said we can do it. Don't ask them, though. Don't ask them. They said we can, but don't ask.
So we want, like... 200,000 AK-47s and stuff like that.
They ended up with 105,000 some of AK-47 or AK-47 variants. And the thing was that the Americans, we have been supplying them and have we have bought over 700,000 M16s for the Iraqi security forces
Which don't particularly work well in the desert.
Not in the desert or the jungle.
And you figure Iraqis, they have an AK-47. Yeah. They use it to open beer. They open, you know, or whatever.
Turn on the television. Pretty much, you know, whatever you got to do.
Kill that rat that's been in the corner of their house or something.
Prop up a sofa that's missing a leg. You know, whatever they need. So really, maybe it's very innocent.
And an AK-47 can do all that. Not an M16, though.
Oh, M16, yeah. That you can't. You can barely even shoot somebody with an M16. So anyway, they managed to get it. The deal was for upwards of $38 million, I believe, and the Italian firm stood to make about $6.6 million. And then the Italians swooped down and shut it all down. They arrested like a dozen Italians.
But now the guns were coming from Russia, right?
The guns were coming. The Iraqis wanted Russian-made.
What did they
AK-47.
Get? Like Chinese?
I believe they got Chinese-made. Yeah. No. I'm sorry. The Italians wanted to sell them Chinese-made AK-47s. The Iraqis wanted Russian ones.
And they had tech support in India, I'm sure, when they had problems with it.
Oh, geez, don't get me started. When my AK jams, I can't even understand the guy. Anyway, through Libya. They got these Russian-made AK-47s. They were going to get these Russian-made AK-47s through Libya to Iraq. The Iraqis said, "You know, if you can't get them into the country, don't worry about it. Ship them somewhere else, and we'll worry about bringing them in to the country." Which, you know, really, that's just that means everything's
above
board.
So, in other words, it was just this. What happened was there was this provisional government, which supposed to be in charge of Iraq. So, why would Americans really care that much if the Americans have turned the government over to them. But apparently,
they're standing up, and we're standing.
They can't be. They can't be doing stuff like that without our approval. They can't be ordering weapons. Right. You know, we're the only ones that are allowed to lose massive quantities of weapons.
We
in
can only
nation.
Lose, 90,000 guns and buy them 700,000 assault rifles. But yeah, they can't buy them on their own. Although, who the hell knows who was buying these weapons? In fact, nobody knows who was buying these weapons.
Well, the bottom
Nobody's
line is,
been arrested.
Is that
no Iraqis
massive amounts of weapons were caught by the Italians, in some kind of scheme to bring into Iraq.
Don't forget Italy.
And, I don't know how they're going to tie that to Iran, but you can bet Fox News is working on that
now.
You know,
they both start with I.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Or that they found some Iranian that liked spaghetti, and so he's probably the mastermind of the whole thing.
His mustache looks like Mussolini's, you know.
Yeah. It's I don't know, but I'm sure that's going to not make a whole lot of mainstream media.
No. Although it is both hilarious and terrifying.
I mean, just this week is just so many. I mean, the Pentagon scandal about a small South Carolina parts supplier, which got about $20.5 million over 6 years from the Pentagon for fraudulent shipping costs.
Wow.
Including
shipping and handling.
$998,000 for sending two washers to a Texas base.
Like washer and dryers?
No.
Or
washers.
Like the metal discs.
Little flat pieces of metal with holes in them.
Yes, and the beauty of this story is how they managed to get this past the extremely careful with our money, U.S. government.
Whoops.
Apparently, anything that's marked priority for our military, you don't really need that much oversight because, you know, it's important. And, you know, the shipping is especially something that doesn't get audited until maybe when somebody gets around to it a decade or two later.
Until the person who profits from that is living in Borneo.
And I guess getting exactly. from South Carolina to Texas, man, that's big bucks there, man. That's at least like $600,000. Right
well,
there.
Gas is really expensive now, man.
I would drive it there personally for a mere $200,000.
And, you know, if you're in Texas and you need a washer, you got to go all the way to South Carolina.
They don't
anyway
make that crap
them.
In Texas.
Yeah.
They don't even make it in Mexico. Yeah, I think you could circumnavigate the globe like four times in a jet and still not have it cause $900,000.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, when I need a washer, the first thing I want to do is fill out a requisition form. you got to wonder how many other people were complicit that were actually in the military.
This kind of crap has been going on for, I mean, what, like 10, 15 years ago they had the hammers that
But that
cost,
was
like
the
like,
$200 or $500 hammer.
Yeah, this is a $900,000 shipping charge.
Well, listen, the company also billed and paid $455,000 to ship three machine screws costing $1.31 each
to
Marines in Iraq. And $293,000 to ship an 89-cent split washer, a broken washer, to Patrick Air Force Base in Cape Canaveral, Florida. So, you know,
Florida.
Where do I get in on this multi-hundred-thousand-dollar hardware deals, man? I like this. This is
we're trying to earn money like suckers, man. We got to.
This whole working thing is not working out for me, man.
Well, clearly, we're not offering the right product. We
right.
need to offer, you know,
washers.
Small metal hardware Jesus. Bits.
I bet
with
they need
really
bolts.
Good shipping fees.
We got bolts.
Well, I think first we have to give like $50,000 to some Republican. That's the first step, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Put that we're head of the Arabian Horse Association on our resumes, and then we'll get appointed to Federal Emergency Management or Department of Transportation.
Then you get one of those sweet consulting gigs.
You know what's funny? In the 80s.
Nice non-competitive contract.
In the 80s, they had movies about people like this. You know, that fish out of water thing where, you know, like a guy that was worked in a fast food place suddenly was the king of a nation or something.
Right. But they starred Eddie Murphy and nobody took him that serious.
Yeah, but I mean, there was lots of little stories about people not being qualified and suddenly rising to the occasion. But in reality, you see these appointments, these people, you know, like the guy, the head of the FCC. I mean, he probably couldn't even set the clock on a VCR.
Well, the senator who was in charge of regulating the internet had no clue what the internet was.
Thought right, was and of course, the FEMA director who was the head of the Arabian Horse Association. Right.
Brownie.
Oh, well, let's not forget, since the mine disaster is, like, big on the news right now.
Oh, right.
Who's apparently, in charge of mining? The guy in charge of mine safety is, of course, himself a former mining executive whose businesses were, shall we say, not entirely the most highly rated for safety ever.
Who was he appointed by?
I believe that would be President Bush.
Oh, right.
But, of course, it had to be a recess appointment because he was such a bad candidate, he could not be approved by the full Senate.
Yeah, and this recess appointment, I mean,
we
that's...
We've got to close that loophole. Jesus.
That Congress leaves,
right,
and the president intentionally appoints somebody when Congress is not in session, so there's no debate on it, right?
I kind of picture it.
And then they
they're
just like so bored or busy with other shit that they don't go back and go, what the hell did you do?
I don't know that they can. They have to wait for
they
some
have to
period
wait.
Of time.
It's supposed to be a temporary appointment, something like 6 months. And the idea is that, you know, say your Secretary of Transportation keels over dead and Congress is out
it's
of session, you got to fill that post.
Right. Who's going to fill the potholes?
Having a competent president who appoints competent people.
That's really sort of the assumption.
Yeah, that is an assumption.
I kind of picture, you know, the president's leading his guy in and they hide in the bathroom until the security guard closes the Congress at night. And then, bam, he's in. They can't get him out.
That's pretty much how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works in my head.
It's democracy.
Bum, 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 bum.
Well, we're nearing the end of our hour here.
No.
And
time flies.
Yes, yes, yes. And
I need more of that caps off.
We're actually not nowhere near running out of interesting things to talk about. So we're just going to have to take it to another show, probably. Anybody likes this initial podcast and they decide
Please
that they
like
want to hear
it.
More, you know?
Email pile at bsalert.com.
Or just visit.
Or
bsalert.com.
We're updating it all the time. And even if we don't, just click on stuff.
While you're listening to this, we're updating it. We're finding something, and Wise Girl is making interesting shapes and things
click
like that.
Click on the ads. We have all kinds of cool ads.
No, you can't say that.
I mean, don't click on the ads.
No. You can't say that. Don't say that either.
Oh, I mean.
There are no ads.
There are no ads.
Just make sure you check out the entire website. You know what I mean? When I, like, that's in
all
italics
of the
and
content.
Bold. Wink. It's just everything, yes.
All of it. I'm sorry.
No. You know.
I mean, I'm not sorry. I have nothing to apologize for.
Never happened.
Don't worry, you'll get a pardon right before the end of the show, so it's no problem.
I got one of them consulting gigs.
Yes. But thanks for listening to the BS Alert podcast. Visit bsalert.com. And feel free to participate in our community. We're all really down to earth. We're not looking to be more important than anybody else, at least not yet until we get more big.
Get more money.
Yeah.
I mean, bigger.
But you know what? We'll totally forget you when we become really big and powerful.
Waiting to burn some bridges.
Right, yeah. You'll have something to bitch about when we're like...
we sell out.
When John Stewart mentions us, you know? So, that's all from bsalert.com.